Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, also a writer over at bourbonstreetshots.com, where I actually have an article up for you guys today about just some of my various thoughts from the Pelicans' 2-5 start since the DeMarcus Cousins trade. Coming to you guys on this Tuesday, I have no idea what year it is. It is certainly not 2017, because if you watched the Pelicans Jazz game last night, we were clearly traveling back in time to before good offense, before good defense, before people really knew how to shoot a basketball into a hoop with a net hanging down below it. Because frankly, that was just maybe one of the worst games I've ever seen. We're going to recap that for you guys here today on Locked On Pelicans. Going to do that in the first half of the podcast, because the second half, which is going to be a little bit longer than normal, is going to be Michael McNamara, also of bourbonstreetshots.com, and I talking about the Pelicans' options this offseason. Because if you, again, watched that game last night against the Jazz and woke up this morning with the Pelicans 4.5 games out of the 8th seed, playoffs aren't likely here. We need to start shifting our focus to something else. And that's the offseason and what the Pelicans can do to put some more talent on the court around Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and to a lesser extent, Drew Holiday. So we're going to have all the different scenarios out there. Basically, you're looking at 5 or 6 different scenarios. Really, 1 or 2 are the way the Pelicans are going to go. Mac's going to really dive into it, give us the options, how they go about doing it, what's going to be available. So it'll be a deep dive and a pretty in-depth look that you're really not going to get anywhere else, showing you exactly the way and the path forward for this Pelicans team. All right, so the 88-83 loss for the Pelicans. And this is a game that really seemed like it was much more than that, with the Pels kind of getting scrappy towards the end of it, pulling themselves back in. But you never really felt like they had a chance to actually win this game. The biggest lead for Utah was 18 points at a certain point. Pels had their normal Pels problems. That's really what it comes down to. Not that I would have thought they would have won this game had they played at the top of their game, but clearly with the score only being 5 points, again, not quite reflective of the play on the court, but that is the final score. A little bit better play here and there, and they could have maybe pulled off a win on the second night of a back-to-back. And it being the second night of a back-to-back, you saw both teams looking exhausted and tired and not really having the legs. Especially the Pelicans, but Utah, don't forget, also played overtime on the road in Sacramento the night before. Pels still had 20 total turnovers. Same problem, dribbling in traffic. Holiday largely was ineffective. He himself had 4 turnovers. The bigs and Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins combined for 9. A lot of that is they're really not getting help from the outside shooters. And yesterday on the podcast, you guys heard me talking about the uncontested field goal percentage for the Pelicans and how poorly it has been. And it's not available right now when I'm recording this podcast. I'll try and tweet it out either later tonight or, sorry, today. You guys know I usually do this the night before. I'll try and tweet it out today or whenever it becomes available. But you have 9 turnovers between those two. It's largely, again, because they're not getting help. Rather than kick the ball out for an open 3-pointer, which they do at times, it's better for them maybe to fight through a double or triple team and try and get a score, because they know they're not getting help elsewhere. I mean, that's obviously going to be a problem because they've been turning the ball over. But you have a stretch. I forget if it was the second or it was in the second quarter, where Dante Cunningham had 3 straight shot attempts for the Pels, all in the left corner, all wide open. And on all 3 of those, he missed. 0-for-3 from 3 wide open corner threes. At this point, wouldn't you rather have DeMarcus Cousins or Anthony Davis fight through a double or triple team and maybe draw a foul than kick it out to a guy like that who's shooting like that right now. On the night, the Pelicans shot a whopping hot 35.7% from the field, 30.3% beyond the arc. And, you know, they were at least somewhat better from free throw when they shot 72.2. And, you know, things weren't necessarily much better for Utah, but you're not going to win when you're shooting under 36% from the field. At one point, the Pelicans were shooting 25%, and it was like the fourth quarter. You're not going to win a damn game if that's the case. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And I mean, you have people that are kind of, you know, the normal culprits. Dante Cunningham, 0 for 4 from that short corner. Solomon Hill, 0 for 4 overall from the field, 0 for 3 from deep. You have just, again, no help. Even Drew Holiday was ice cold. He was 1 of 9. He shot 11.1% on the night. He was actually benched the entire fourth quarter in favor of Jordan Crawford, who was signed today. You have a guy who was signed today who was playing over someone else because, frankly, they were playing so poorly. Hollis Thompson, you know, who started, was 1 of 4 from the field overall. Etuan Moore better. He shot 4 of 8. He got 50%. He got into double figures, 1 of 4 total Pelicans to do so. Obviously, two of them being Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. But, you know, at a certain point, you just don't have shooting or people around who are going to can make this team good. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and to a lesser extent, Drew Holiday, can only do so much. And part of this is really good defending from the Jazz. I want to give them credit, especially the inside. DeMarcus Cousins was 5 of 15 overall. Anthony Davis, 7 of 17. They both hung around the three-point line a lot, partially because they were they were just ineffective going inside against Rudy Gobert, who just shuts down Davis when they play each other. So they had to try and find another way to score. But overall, I mean, you just see it on this team that you don't have the horses. You don't have guys who can carry you to wins or anything like that outside those guys. And even then, you're not asking them to do that much. You're not asking them to fully carry you to wins. You just want to get some three-pointers made, some shots made. Pelicans aren't doing it. And because they're not doing that, it puts even more pressure on Davis, Cousins, Holiday. And they're trying to do a little too much at times and fight through double and triple teams, so they turn the ball over. So everything kind of compounds on itself in this kind of just terrible cycle of trash and garbage. And, you know, when that's all happening, you're going to struggle to beat the crappy Los Angeles Lakers, and you're not going to beat or take advantage of the Utah Jazz when they come in on the second night of a back-to-back, and for them, frankly, don't play nearly as well as you would have expected. And that's why this offseason is so important. It's really going to make or break, you know, the future of this franchise. And as my next guest, who we're going to get to in a moment, is going to really talk about, it's not necessarily this offseason, but potentially the one after, depending on how a few things go. But you've got to do something, and Dell Demps has to do something. And Michael McNamara is going to go into all the different ways that they can try and maybe turn this team into a contender. Also, don't forget, you can subscribe to Locked On Pelicans on iTunes, on Audio Boom. Get it coming to you guys on Stitcher, whatever podcast app you use, it is there. Please do so. It definitely helps the podcast. If you could also like it on Facebook, there's a Facebook page created for it. It's Locked On Pelicans. You'll see it with the logo and everything. And also give it a follow on Twitter. It's at Locked On Pels. Do this for me, you guys. Come on. This comes to you 5 days a week. It's free. And I love doing it, but let's get it a little bit of recognition on social media. That certainly helps the podcast and can definitely make a difference. So go ahead, like it, share it, do what you can to get people listening to it. Someone told me the other day that the month of March is actually to try new podcasts. I think they called it like Tripod or something like that for the month of March. So friends who aren't listening to it, try and get them to listen to an episode. This is certainly going to be a good one to start. So share it with everyone, and let's try and make it the best Pelicans podcast out there, because frankly, it's basically the only one. And joining me here on Locked On Pelicans, I have Michael McNamara from various different roles on bourbonstreetshots.com. He currently is back on Twitter. It's at Silver and Mac. Mac, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Sorry, I had to say that cheesy line that I hear at the beginning of every podcast.
I mean, I do it when I go on like radios down here. It just seems like that's what you're supposed to say, but I guess you're right, where like you're doing me a favor by coming on here today, so there's no reason for you to thank me.
Well, it's not like you flew me out on a private jet to be in studio and then lavished me with gifts in a green room. Like, you know, behind the scenes, we're on telephones right now. Like, you did nothing. I did nothing. So let's stop thanking each other.
Yeah, I literally have I'm at my dining room table with my computer out and a microphone. It's like not that glamorous.
I have a dog. Not at all. But thank you anyway.
There we go. See, that's all. Look, it was a nice thing to say. So you've been busy on BourbonStreetShots.com writing about the various off-season scenarios coming up for the Pelicans here. And I think the biggest takeaway from it is, despite trading for DeMarcus Cousins, knowing they might need to re-sign Drew Holiday, they have a lot of different options, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, there's some paths that are more likely than others. But the truth of the matter is that they could just kind of survey the market, find, you know, the areas where things might be undervalued, or they could jump on an opportunity, and they could pretty much make any opportunity happen. I mean, they're likely to operate above the cap, I would say, more likely than not. But I think everybody should remember, well, not like anybody's going to forget, but remember the Omer Asik trade of a couple of years ago. Basically, Dell just talked to Daryl Morey and said, hey, we want this guy. We'll give you a pick. They agreed to it a couple of days before the draft. And then Dell spent the next 8 to 10 days figuring out how to make it work. And he did. And this could be a very similar situation where they might think that they take a more conservative path. And then all of a sudden, the Charlotte starts putting around that they want, you know, to get rid of Nick Batum. And Dell could say, all right, we'll give you a pick, and then find a way to make it work over those next, 6 to 8 days. So I think that's the biggest takeaway, is that, you know, the line I've been saying is that nothing is likely, but pretty much everything is possible.
Yeah, they just have kind of more flexibility, and I guess it's reactive, but not necessarily in a bad way. So the two biggest options before, I guess, maybe we talk about the Holiday scenario, is operating under the cap and operating over the cap. You said let's start with operating under the cap, since you said over is more likely. How would they go about setting all of that up to make this happen? Because they do have a lot of salary on the books right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to kind of separate everything. And to me, I start off by looking at just the big three, or what we're calling the big three. And going into this summer, those guys are only going to count for, and I say only, but they're only going to count for about $58.7 million. The cap will be around $102, $103. So if you just look at those three as a little bit more than half of the cap, you know, you could be somewhat optimistic about that, because moving forward, those three are going to be worth $80 to $85 million after this summer. So this will be the last time that they're anywhere near this percentage of the cap. So when you look at it that way, you go, okay, well, that would give me about $40 million to operate if those were the only three guys on my roster. Now, is it possible that, I could get everybody else off my roster? It would be tough. And when you look at all those names collectively, you know, it looks overwhelming. But as you start to look at them individually, you say, yeah, I could probably get pretty much everybody off this roster, with the exception of, you know, Asik.
No one's banging down the door for Solomon Hill.
Yeah, I mean, he would be the tough one, but the Nets were out there trying to sign Alan Crabb for $18 million a year. You know, Evan Turner got $18 million a year. Could you find a team that takes them and maybe even give up? I mean, that's possible. And, you know, Asik, you could stretch, so that cap hold becomes, you know, about $3.5 million. So long story short, is it possible? Yeah, I would say it is. And maybe you've got to give up a couple of picks, and you're obviously going to hurt your depth. But like I said, if a guy like Nick Batum is out there, or, you know, Goran Dragic or somebody of that level, and Dell says, you know, that big four could really compete long-term with Golden State, and I got to find a way to make it happen, depth be damned. The point is, he could make it happen. It would be tough, and it's not likely, but it could happen.
So they'd have to move all those guys. They create cap space, and it frees them up to either sign a guy into that cap space that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise. But the big thing is it probably opens you up to uneven trades where you can take back more salary than you can send out, correct?
Yeah. I mean, a guy like Goran Dragic has 3 years and $54 million left. And let's say you got rid of, you know, Osic and then Ajinsa you dumped and Solomon Hill, you found a spot for him. You could just go to Miami and say, hey, look, we know you're trying to rebuild. Here's a first round pick or two plus Quincy Pondexter's salary, which will basically be paid off by insurance. You get out from that $54 million you owe Dragic. You could be terrible next year. And here's a couple of picks like that. Something like that is possible. Same with Charlotte with Batum. Same with a team like the Raptors, who are about to pay, you know, Ibaka and Lowry. Maybe they just want to give away a Damari Carroll, you know, somebody like that. So that's how that would work. I don't really see any free agents that are realistic that you would spend all that cap space on, but there would be several guys that I would target in uneven trades.
Yeah, and it's just designed to bring in kind of a big – make it a from a big three to a big four. But if they go above the cap and they keep some of the depths in some of these guys or they're not able to move them, what's the situation they're looking at there?
So, I mean, they basically stay above the cap. Everybody who's on the roster right now, with the exception of, like, Donatas Montiejunas, who doesn't have any kind of bird rights – you know, they could bring back. So if Cunningham opts out, they could bring him back. So just imagine a scenario in which everybody's on the team now pretty much is on the team again. And then now they have the mid-level exception, which is a little over $8 million this year. They have the biannual exception, which will be around three. They have that trade exception that they got in the Sacramento trade. That's about $3.5 million, where they could just take any player making $3.5 million or less off of a team, give nothing back, and it's legal.
They lose that if they go under the cap too.
Right. Yeah. They lose that. They lose the mid level. They lose the biannual. They would only have the room exception, which is, you know, slightly better than the biannual, but not the greatest. And then, so they have those three tools to get guys who are rotation players. You're probably looking at, you know, sixth to ninth men, quality guys with that. And then they could still take some current salaries and trade future first round picks in order to get somebody, as long as the salaries come close to matching. So you could go out and with all those exceptions, get two or three quality guys and then trade Ajinsa and Pondexter plus some future picks and get somebody who's starter level quality. So that route, you're not getting a big four, but could you surround the big three with, you already have Etuan Moore, and then get one other starter level guy, let's say a Wilson Chandler, and then get three quality backups to, you know, go with Solomon Hill. Yeah, that's possible. And you could be looking at a 10, 11 deep roster that's, you know, not as top heavy because you don't have a big four, but has some real depth.
You know, as I think we've seen, what, over the past six games, five with Cousins now, Cousins, Davis, Holiday account for about right around 75% of the Pelicans' offense. And that's in terms of like scoring, where it actually might be more, but it's also in terms of usage, about when you look at it over like the course of the entire game. Do you think getting a fourth guy is going to be better, or is it better to fill that remaining 25% with a little bit more depth? Because the thing I see is they just don't have anyone outside those three guys right now. And it seems like you need one, two, or three more to try and step up and contribute.
Yeah, I would think I think there's a couple of questions I would have to have answered to be able to give, you know, an idea of an answer to the question you just asked me. And that's, one, are we talking about just next year or long term? Because if you go the route where you get the fourth good player, let's say you get Dragic or Batum, then yeah, you're super top heavy next year. But then you go into the following summer, and now you have the mid-level. Now you have the biannual again. Maybe you could trade, you know, future picks again at that point. And now you could fill out the depth. So do you get the fourth guy who you'll probably never be able to get again because you'll never have cap room again? And then just get a fifth, sixth seed next year and then fill out the depth? I mean, that would be the argument for going the top heavy roster. The other thing I would have to know is Benson willing to pay the luxury tax? Because if you go and get the fourth guy this year, you're not going to be in the luxury tax this year, but starting next year and then beyond, you're going to be right up against that luxury tax, if not over. So if I'm Dell Demps and I'm planning this team, I would have to know the answer to that question, because it would be almost impossible to get my fourth guy and then get depth in future years without being over the luxury tax. So that's the question that's unanswerable right now, at least from what I know.
Well, I talked to someone who I'd trust on this sort of thing, and they said basically they think Benson will pay, and almost to the point of a blank checkbook, though I don't know how much I believe that part. If the team's going to win, they're not going to necessarily waste money on a 10-day guy or filling out the roster in a lost season always. But if the team is being competitive and winning, which, you know, hasn't been the case these past couple of years, really, he seems to think that Benson would pay. But that luxury tax gets really punitive and hurtful the longer you're in it and the more you go over it.
Yeah, so maybe you could do a situation where you get the fourth guy, and again, you wouldn't be in the luxury tax this year, but then the next year you probably would be, and then maybe you find ways to jump out of it the next year and then jump back in so you don't have, you know, all these repeater taxes and something like that. But maybe Benson is at a point where, I mean, the Saints have, what, been 7-9 the last 3 years. The Pelicans haven't been winning. You know, maybe that's right. Maybe if you put a 56-win team on the court next year and then go to them and say, hey, Mr. Benson, I want to use the MLE and, you know, all this, but that'll put us into the tax. What do you think? You know, Saints had another 6-10 season. Sorry, Saints fans, but it's happening. You know, and then I could see Benson saying, okay, yeah, you've got the green light. So, yeah, that would be my argument for getting the fourth guy, is you will never, ever have another chance to really use significant cap room with these big three. So why not get the guy now, be top heavy, and your plan is just to fill out the depth the following year?
I mean, and you can also trade one of those guys potentially later down the line if, you know, if it's too top heavy and you need some more depth, and maybe at least recoup some of the assets and some of the depth that you sacrificed to get there. So on the site, the other thing you mentioned is the, to me at least, long shot scenario, but it's worth covering, and there's still a possibility this happens, of Drew Holiday not being back after this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I see where I understand people want value, especially in America. Like, you turn on your television, you'll see bargain hunters and you'll see house flippers and all this idea of getting something below value. My wife's a real estate agent, and I can't tell you, it hasn't happened once where people say, yeah, I want to pay list price or over, even if that's what the market dictates. So I understand that people want value, and Drew Holiday is about to get paid more than what he objectively brings you value-wise on a basketball court. But I wanted to put that piece out there because all I saw was people screaming, you know, we can't pay Holiday the max or close to it. And I say, okay, well, here are your available options if you let him walk out that door. Show me a path to a better team if you let Holiday walk. And I mean, it's possible. Can you go get an Alfred Payton or a Dante Exum cheap and those guys blossom? Could you go get a Jeremy Lin and he's even better for Gentry's offense than Holiday and obviously cheaper? Or could Ricky Rubio, you know, be the point guard that AD and Boogie need? All that is possible, but, you know, you're taking a bunch of huge gambles if you let Drew walk. And I just don't see the path that's surefire. Yep, I could let Drew walk and put together a better roster, because you're not really saving the money that you're not paying Drew Holiday. You're letting him walk, and you don't get that 25 to 30 million to spend in free agency. So I just don't see how you really replace his value.
No, it was like the Clippers with the DeAndre Jordan and Mavs thing, where if he ended up going to the Mavs, they were so screwed. They had to do everything they could to bring him back, because like you said, you don't have that money just to spend and improve your team. And we've seen Boogie and Davis right now alone can't will this team to victory. You actually have to have some help and talent around those guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely right. And like I said, I mean, there are chances that you could. I mean, the best argument I would make is I would say, okay, I let Drew walk. I get a point guard who has one or two years remaining on his deal, who still make me a good team, like a Jeremy Lin. And then 2 years from now, pretty much everybody is off my books except for Cousins and Anthony Davis. I've been a quality playoff team for the last 2 years. Can I go out and have those two guys lure John Wall? It's a huge long shot, and the answer is probably no. But again, I always try to look at every single one of my beliefs and arguments and try to make the best argument against it. And that would probably be my best case scenario if you let Drew walk, where if you keep Drew and let's say he gets another injury and he becomes Eric Gordon untradeable for the remainder of the contract, then you're really, really talking about limiting flexibility for the next 3 or 4 years. So that's probably the best argument I can make in letting Drew walk.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting thing. So if they bring in John Wall in this hypothetical 2 years down the road thing, you pretty much have to bring in Calipari at that point as the coach, don't you? It just makes too much sense, according to probably everyone on Twitter at that point.
Yeah, and then you got to go see what Darius Miller's up to. James Young is a free agent. I'm going to bring him in, and then, yeah, just get a Kentucky squad, put it all together, have Calipari coach it and see what happens. But yeah, I mean, that would maybe be your dream scenario. But if you're Dell Demps right now, are you saying, you know, I'm gonna let Drew walk and put a 5% chance on getting John Wall, which, oh, by the way, will probably make Calipari want to coach here, which he'll kick me out of my job the first second he has a chance to do it. So I just don't see Dell Demps doing that series of moves.
No, that especially for someone who still, even though this trade probably makes him safer, still isn't, I would say, on the most solid ground when it comes to the position he's in. So we mentioned, though, getting rid of Gentry. You said that's something that's going to be coming on bourbonstreetshots.com, where looking at whether he's the coach to keep or not.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be part five of my series of, again, it's off-season possibilities, not off-season likelihoods. And at the end of every year, what the Pelicans do is they sit down and they evaluate each position. And at this time, you know, a couple of years ago, or even in April a couple of years ago, I don't think they thought they were going to fire Monty Williams. And then they wound up doing their evaluations and they wound up firing him. Is it possible with Gentry? Yeah, I would say it's possible. I wouldn't call it likely at all, just because the fact that it just makes your franchise look unstable to a guy who has come from probably the most unstable franchise in NBA history. So, I wouldn't call it likely, but I think it's something that you at least have to explore. Again, I do this a lot on the In the Know podcast, but my way of thinking and the way I think everybody should think is you don't think of Alvin Gentry as your coach and you're firing him. You always think of any situation as a blank slate, and Alvin Gentry is one of the possibilities to fill your coaching position. And there's also other possibilities. And then you pick the best one. But when we tie like emotion and history to things, that's when we make stupid decisions. So is it possible that the Pelicans could look at it that way and go, you know what, if we had this roster today in an open coaching spot, there's no way we would pick Gentry as our coach. So why are we keeping him? I don't think it's likely, but you got to believe it's possible, especially what we saw happen with Monty 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, that came out of just nowhere. I remember you and I were prepping in the middle of the season before for him to get fired, and that never happened I think there was an article up in the back of the site, like ready to go the second he came down, and then never happened. And of course, comes down after they make the playoffs, and he gets a vote of confidence from Tom Benson. So I guess really you have never know with this team now. But okay, so that was part five. What's part four going to be?
So, I don't want to go all nerd and explain all the financials right now, but I do think, again, there's a small possibility. If DeMarcus Cousins comes to the team and says, I'll sign an extension today, just use cap room to bump me up and, you know, to the max and then extend me off of that. The Pelicans would take it back and talk amongst themselves and they would say, okay, well, route one is we could extend Boogie today. He gets his money and security, but what that basically costs us is the chance to really do all these things that I talked about earlier in the podcast. You lose pretty much a significant part of your cap room, if not all of it. Plus you wouldn't have the mid-level, plus you wouldn't have the TPE, plus you wouldn't have the biannual. So basically you would just have the roster you have now and maybe one or two guys like an Anthony Morrow level or, you know, whatever. So you would probably be sacrificing your roster for the upcoming year. But then on the other side, you say, well, while I'm doing that, I do have my big three locked in for the next 3 or 4 years, and I don't have to worry about, you know, a cataclysmic event happening next year and then Boogie walking. So, you know, would that be something you consider, or would you say, nope, you know, we got to get a Patty Mills and I'm just trying to reach and get another name out of my butt, you know, some other eighth or ninth man. Would getting two players like that be worth the 10%, 15% chance that DeMarcus Cousins walks? I don't know. I can't answer that question, but I think it'll be very tempting to the Pelicans if Cousins says, I will sign right now, give me the contract, and all you've got to do is really sacrifice like maybe a sixth man and ninth man for next season. It's not as an easy of a call as I think some fans might make it out to be.
No, I mean, I think a lot of people expect him to re-sign after next year anyway, but if you can just lock it down this summer and you have the stability going forward, that also can be attractive to free agents at a certain point too, or people that maybe are on expiring deals you trade for during the season, knowing they're going to want to re-sign here because you have this core locked in long-term. And again, there's no chance of them really bolting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why these things are possibilities, because I think the Pelicans are going to be considering a lot of different paths. I think the safest is to assume that they're just going to add a couple of quality bodies. I mean, you saw in that Lakers game yesterday, Solomon Hill and Hollis Thompson played good for one quarter. The third quarter, Hill hit like two shots in a row, which I almost fell off my couch, and Thompson got a couple of steals and rebounds in that quarter. And all of a sudden, the Pelicans win the quarter 28-14. So if you really believe that if you just got two fairly good guys in those spots, you would become a dominant team, then you take that route and just bank on the fact that Cousins is going to want to sign the next summer. But I just don't think it's that easy of a choice.
No, I'm with you, but you bring up a good point, and I've been talking about this on the podcast the past couple of days, basically since they made the move and played that Thursday night game. The shooting on this team on open, uncontested looks, which it's not like you hit those at 100% rate, but you don't normally expect to shoot like 32% on 50 open shots, essentially, in a game. If they can just get a little bit of help there, you can see this offense would be actually pretty frightening, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. But I mean, the one thing that I will say in defense of these terrible players is that, you know, you look at a box score from the Oklahoma City Portland game the other night, and, you know, everybody was making a big deal because Russell Westbrook had like 45 points. And I think the second highest guy in the starting lineup was like 2 or 4 or something ridiculous. Those guys aren't that bad. They just don't touch the ball that much. And then finally, when they get it, you know, they're cold and they're putting all this pressure on themselves because they might not touch the ball for another 10 minutes. And I think that's harder than what people think. And that's the difficult part here is you might be able to put Etuan Moore in another situation where he touches the ball more and he's a 42-43% shooter, but now he rarely gets it. And because of that, you know, he shoots 33% with these guys. I think, you know, it's tough to play with guys that are that high usage. Like, I think it takes a very special person to not touch the ball for 6 or 7 minutes. And then when they finally get it, put the ball in the basket. That's something that I think is going to be harder to find than people think. I don't think you just take a 43% shooter from somewhere else and put them on this team and think that they're going to shoot that well or better, because even though they might get open looks, they're also not touching the ball or even looking at the rim for large periods of time. And it's just very hard to do that and then all of a sudden make the shot when the ball is kicked to you.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. But at a certain point, it can't be that low is partially what it is. And it's not like those uncontested looks are coming from Davis and Cousins, really, because they're doing a lot of their work inside where even though they're scoring really well, they're still contested. They just happen to jump over those guys. But you're right. It's a hard and fine line to try and figure out how to make this offense, I guess, hum and work exactly like they need to. So before I let you go, what would you do to the in-game experience in the Smoothie King Center? Because you have a lot of thoughts on this. And also, you're probably going to say so many words and people and like song titles. I'm going to have no idea what you're talking about.
I mean, now I don't go, obviously, as often as you. I've probably been to 4 or 5 games in the last 5 years there. But NBA League Pass is really awesome now because, you know, especially when I watch it on the app, instead of commercials, they basically give you a live stream of what's going on in the arena. So I see every halftime show. I, you know, hear all the music during breaks, and it's some of the saddest stuff I've ever heard. Like it really feels like it feels like the in-game entertainment people are just discovering the Baja Men. Like, they've just heard of this group, this like new edgy group that's out there, and they want to know more. Like, it feels like they're that far back in time. I think the most current song I hear is All I Do Is Win, which came out in February of 2010. And that's kind of like their new jam. And it just doesn't make any sense because they're drawing from, I mean, you are in an area and you even have the guys come into the game, for my money, the best rap music of all time. I mean, I'm talking about Cash Money, Lil Wayne, Juvenile, who, you know, still to this day, if you see me at the gym and I'm smiling or nodding my head, it's because I've got 400 degrees, you know, on my iPod. I don't get how you have all that at your disposal and then you roll out the weakest halftime shows I've ever seen. Or like when you're really going for local music, you bring out, again, no offense, but Branford Marsalis or Harry Connick Jr. Like, that's fine for like, I don't know. I don't even know if New Orleans has some kind of rugby team or whatever, but I just don't get how you don't draw from, again, the greatest music of the 90s and 2000s. I don't get it. It drives me absolutely nuts. And I don't know what to do, Jake. I don't know if you have any connections, but there needs to be a Juvenile night at the very least.
I mean, we could try and push it. That's something we could probably get at least trending in New Orleans on Twitter. By the way, I did know Baja Men, and that's Who Let the Dogs Out. That one I did have down. I didn't just look that up on my phone, I swear to God. That's one you've got to remember. You sound like Dr. Strange. Yeah. Have you seen that movie yet?
I have, actually. My wife's favorite superhero movie.
There you go. I just saw it the other day, and he keeps listing the songs and their titles and like what year and month they came out, and he's like exact on. You just pulled some of that stuff there right now.
Yeah, no, and the Baja Men actually, they have a new song out called Off the Leash, and it's kind of a throwback to reminiscing about letting the dogs out. I mean, they're musical geniuses at this point. So I totally get why it would be appealing in the Smoothie King Center. But no, I know it has to drive people nuts living in that area. And it's a shame. Got to have a juvenile night. You know, got to get Manny Fresh out there. Got to get Birdman. I don't know if you know any of these people I'm talking about.
I mean, I've heard the names, I've heard the songs. I don't know if I could, like, I tend to like a lot of metal and more rock. So, like, as long as it has three guitars being played, I can usually kind of guess what's going on here. Everything else I've been learning from my girlfriend, I did learn that Flo Rida is one person, and he's from Florida, and that's how he got his name. So I'm learning. Yeah. I'm coming along just slowly.
Did you know that he used to be part of the band Florida Georgia Line?
No, I had no clue about that.
Broke off from that. Yeah, no, that's not true. But yeah, I don't know what else to tell you. Do you? You know, I would watch Birdman and just Google Birdman, put some respect on my name with a K. You know, you'll fall in love with that clip. But yeah, they need to get those guys out there and improve the in-game entertainment, and maybe that'll come with a winning team.
I mean, it's such a unique city, and everyone loves the All-Star game down here because of how unique it is. And then you're right, a lot of the in-arena stuff for, you know, the listeners who go to games, and I know a lot of my listeners like work at the arena. So it's, you know, maybe they've got some pull and they can try and, you know, push some people in the right direction to kind of mix it up and make it pretty unique and different.
Would be nice. Watching from my couch, I would definitely enjoy that, and I'm sure it would be even better to the people who pour out the hard-earned money for season tickets. If you can't give them wins, at least give them some entertainment.
I mean, that's pretty good. We get tired of, you know, the same old, although the halftime shows, though, I do like Red Panda, the bowl cup flipping lady is always awesome.
Yeah, but she missed like two plates last time.
She did. She was also out for a year with like a torn ACL or MCL in her knee or something too. I know. She's still recovering.
Yeah.
Do you think
Oshik,
when he comes back from his illness, is going to be the same player he once was?
I doubt it, but I mean, with the Red Panda chick, I'm praying for Trump to call her overrated. That would be the world for me.
NBA
because
I
would
freak out, I think. Can you imagine like the outrage over that?
Yeah, drop two bowls, sad. Yeah, that might be one thing I actually agree with him on, because, you know, I know Zach Lowe loves her. Now it's bad to say something, you know, you can't say something bad about her, but she missed two bowls last time. And, you know, you don't bounce back from an ACL surgery, you know, and ride a unicycle the way you once did.
No, I think that just sums everything up. I don't know what else it does. Just to end it there. Mac, thanks so much for joining me. Everyone, be nice to him on Twitter. Is that the way I should frame it?
Put some respect on my name.
Yeah, put some respect on his name with a K. Give him a follow. It's Silver and Mac. You can yell at him about the Raiders, too.
They suck. Yep.
All right, Mac, thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks for having me.
There we go, twice in one podcast.
So I know we've gone a little long today, and I want to wrap everything up for you guys. So that was Mac talking about the different options the Pelicans can take. Obviously, those options are going to become more important to talk about as we get a little bit more towards the end of the season, as we dive into the offseason, which is going to be here before you know it. We'll get a little bit of a break during the NBA playoffs, since the Pels likely aren't going to be in there, but you never know. But, you know, not all is lost for the Pelicans despite this 2-5 start. They have a lot of different directions they can go, a shocking amount of options to improve this team, and they're in a good position to kind of sit back and take what comes to them rather than having to give up too much on an open market for a traded player, or whether it be a contract, what have you. So they are in a good position going forward. So that'll do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Don't forget, I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Also, give the podcast a follow on Twitter. It's at Locked On Pels. Next game up is going to be Toronto at home in the Smoothie King Center, where hopefully the Pelicans can get a win. Like I said, they've been playing better. They're just missing a lot of shots. If you want a little bit more insight on how they've been playing since DeMarcus Cousins has been here, check out bourbonstreetshots.com today. I've got an article up just going into some random musings and thoughts and things I've seen. It dives into some of the rebounding, the offensive struggles. Last thing I want to mention that was pretty apparent in the Jazz game was DeMarcus Cousins and his demeanor a little bit. And you can see the losings wearing on him a little bit. The slow start the Pelicans had, they were down, I think it was 32-16, getting doubled up, was wearing on him. It forced him to kind of hang out by the three-point line a little bit, maybe complain to the refs about calls, which is something he's been known for, rather than getting back on defense to grab boards or help out, whatever it might be. That's starting to become apparent. You know, the attitude and everything hasn't been an issue so far since he's been here. I didn't think it was really going to be an issue going forward here. But I was told, and had Leo Biez on the podcast 2 weeks ago, saying that once they start losing, that's when you might start to see these issues creep up. You know, they've been losing now. It'll be something to keep an eye on. Can Cousins stay engaged? If he can, the Pelicans will start winning some games, especially if a guy like Solomon Hill or Dante Cunningham start hitting shots. They're going to run off a win streak. But until that happens, who knows, what sort of turmoil the Pelicans might be in store for. So again, thank you all for listening. I'll thank you. I know McNamara doesn't like saying thank you, but I do thank you all for listening. And I'll be back with you guys tomorrow.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.